Welcome back to the AgriCurious podcast. Today, we're diving into one of the most eye-catching yet most destructive invasive species in U.S. agriculture, the spotted lanternfly. With its striking red, black, white, yellow body banded in black spots, it almost looks too beautiful to be a threat. But don't be fooled. This insect has quickly become one of the most urgent invasive pests in the United States. First discovered in 2014 in Pennsylvania, it has now spread across 18 states, attacking mostly vineyards. Now, earlier this year at the Cornell Lake Erie Research and Extension Laboratory in Portland, New York, I sat down with two experts who work directly on this pest, Dr. Julie Urban and Megan Luke. They share their insights on the lanternfly's origins, behavior, why it's such a major concern. They also gave us a look into the research and extension efforts underway to slow its march and protect vineyards and its other targets. We also spoke about its favorite host, the Tree of Heaven. It's an episode full of science, real-world experience, and, you know, you would wonder how something so striking can be so destructive. Well, I will let my guests introduce themselves, and then we can get into the conversation. Trust me, you will learn a lot from this. My name is Dennis Bafo Ewa. Call me the Artistic Scientist. Let's do this together. Come with me.
Hi, I'm Dr. Julie Urban. I'm a research associate professor at Penn State University in University Park.
Megan Luke, I'm an extension educator with Penn State University and a member of the Lake Erie Regional Grape Program team, which is a contractual collaboration between Cornell University and Penn State.
Thank you very much. So first of all, I would want to, you know, when we talk about pests, when we talk about invasive species, what are those? Dr. Julie, would you want to start with that?
Sure. So an invasive species is a species that essentially is where it shouldn't be. It's been somehow transported outside of its native range. And so in our case, the spotted lanternfly is something that Megan and I have been studying. And this is a sap-feeding plant hopper whose native range includes China and Vietnam. And basically, it's from Asia, but it's been inadvertently transported here to the United States. And when that happens, the predators, the natural enemies, the diseases that normally keep populations of spotted lanternfly in check in its native range that have co-evolved with it and served to balance it out, those are no longer here. So it kind of is left to run amok without its natural enemies.
So if you have worked with spotted lanternfly, if you've come in contact with these pests, how do they behave? What are some of the characteristics?
So spotted lanternfly is a sap feeder. Its mouth parts are fused into a straw-like beak, and it inserts that into plant tissue, and it feeds on the sap. And so it feeds on, there's records that it feeds on over 100 different things, but one of its primary preferred plants is grapevine, and the feeding from it depletes the grapevine of its resources, and it can be hugely problematic, have implications for vine health, and even kill it, which is why this is a concern for Megan and the work that she's doing with growers in the Erie region.
All right, so that makes it very interesting to introduce your work, Megan. What are you doing about this, and what are some of your findings that you would want to share with our listeners?
Sure. So spotted lanternfly, because it is completely new to our area, the preliminary science, once it became established and once researchers had observed and documented the damage and the risk to grapevines, the next phases of work that occur are to determine how the grapevines are impacted and what phases of crop production may be negatively impacted by this pest. So there was an invasive pest, a similar invasive pest in California about 20 years ago now, called glassy wing sharpshooter. And its major impact in grapevines was vectoring disease that could then kill the grapevines. So that was a lot of concern around spotted lanternfly at first. Did it have the ability to vector disease or to cause ongoing damage to the grapevines? And Thankfully, so far, we haven't found anything that indicates that that's one of the major issues. However, they do remove so much of the nutrition from the vines, you know, they just suck it all out like a straw, that it does have a negative impact on the health and the vigor of the vine, meaning if you have a weakened vine, it may not survive a cold winter. And we're also seeing some of our food science researchers have found that it can really impact grape quality in, you know, lower sugars, in less of the compounds that that would make wine made from those grapes preferable for consumers. And where I work, for the most part, where we have primarily juice grape production in the Concord industry, there's a lot of concern about spotted lanternfly, you know, getting into the harvested grapes and being problematic on that ends. So we are looking at ways to, of course, keep lanternfly out of the grapes to prevent the damage to the vines and to prevent the lanternfly itself from making it into the production of the juice and the wine later down the road.
Okay. So I would want to know, do they only affect vineyards or they affect other kind of crops, or that is something we're yet to know?
So basically spotted lanternfly was an invasive plant hopper. It was invasive in South Korea in 2004. And there it was recorded to do the greatest damage to grapevines, but it was also reported as a pest of a lot of other things, mostly tree fruit, stone fruit, like, you know, peaches and plums, as well as ornamental trees and timber trees. And so when it first was detected in eastern Pennsylvania in 2014, you know, we knew all that literature. So we were like, oh no, it's going to impact all of these things. And because it was in Pennsylvania, we were especially concerned about, you know, and where it was peach and apple production, as well as timber, because that's the biggest, you know, export from the state. And since that time, reports from where we've seen damage and also studies that have been done by our viticulturists looking at what is feeding due to grapevines versus what folks working on ornamentals and collaborators working on tree fruit, you know, they exposed these other hosts to lanternfly feeding and found that basically they don't really damage it that much. Lanternfly feeding is a stressor on those other trees. It doesn't really outright kill it like it can with grapevines. So that's good news for those other pests, but that's bad news for the grapevines. And so basically the interesting thing, and I don't want to get too far ahead of your questions, but lanternfly, you know, many of your listeners might be aware of spotted lanternfly because it's expanded and it's now in 17 additional states in the country. And it's been present in major cities like New York City, Washington, D.C., you know, Pittsburgh and whatnot. And so people are really aware of it. And so But what's interesting is that as it spreads, its impact slightly changed. And so in southeastern Pennsylvania, where it's been impacting grapevines and in New Jersey and whatnot, we've cobbled together, you know, our extension folks with researchers, we've cobbled together a management scheme that can let those growers manage it pretty effectively. It can be costly, but they can manage it. And what we realized is that here we are in Erie, where Megan's growers work. In the Erie region, lanternfly isn't quite here yet, but wow, grape production is completely different than it is in the Southeast. And so if lanternfly gets into vineyards here, there's many, many different considerations. And why we've been tapping, you know, Megan's expertise and her collaborators, you know, Jen Russo, collaborators up here, their expertise is try to get in front of lanternfly and anticipate how those impacts might be very different here.
Okay, so you talked about management practices. I would want to know some of the management practices that you have informed these growers to implement to manage the situation. And Megan, I'll come to you. Why you think this has not come to your field yet, where you work? What are some of the things you think you're doing that is actually not making this pest come to the fields where you work? But first of all, let's talk about the management practices that farmers are implementing.
Sure. So basically, spotted lanternfly, it overwinters as an egg. And so it's just about now that it's starting to hatch out. And so even though growers might have many spotted lanternfly egg masses in vineyards, like you've seen since you've been here, it really isn't cost effective for them to treat those egg masses. That's very expensive. And but basically in about a month or two, when these growers would normally apply an insecticide spray to manage Japanese beetles or some other pest, those same chemicals and that same spray can be really, really effective at killing spotted lanternfly. So it doesn't make sense for them to add any additional spray and, you know, the associated cost and time. So our recommendation is just wait. And when you apply that spray you're going to apply anyway, that'll take care of lanternfly. The issue where management practices are different for lanternfly, again, in southeastern Pennsylvania, is that lanternfly tends to come into vineyards in really high numbers, very close to harvest. And so at that time, you know, they just get, you know, inundated with lanternfly coming from some reservoir elsewhere. And that's kind of what we're studying. And so they, at that time, the sprays that growers can apply because of the incoming harvest, of the impending harvest, have to have a really short, we call it pre-harvest interval. They can only act for a short period of time. So those sprays are really effective at knocking down lanternfly and essentially just buying a small time window for the growers then to come in and harvest their grapes. And they mostly harvest by hand, so they can, you know, pick any lanternfly out, or lanternfly will fly out of those bins, and they've applied extra sprays then. And then an additional management recommendation we make is that after harvest, when normally growers don't need, you know, don't apply anything, they've already harvested, they're done for the year, the lanternfly will still hang around and feed very, very heavily on those vines. And if you allow that for multiple months, because it takes multiple, you know, freeze events for the insects to die, like well into November, if you let them hang out on your vines after harvest, they will do serious damage to your vines. So we recommend a post-harvest spray that is very unusual for growers, but growers in the Southeast do employ that method.
So we know that the very first state that this pest actually invaded or was discovered in America was in Pennsylvania. And even though we're in New York State, we're very close to Pennsylvania. But it's surprising that you do not have it over here in your fields. Megan, what do you think some of the things that you're doing that is actually keeping your fields safe from these pests? And are you anticipating or dreading that sometime they could be introduced here?
So that's kind of the million-dollar question, I think, right now, because if we knew how we were keeping it out, we would be able to replicate that. So there's a lot of factors that make the grape production in this region different than, honestly, most other places in the Mid-Atlantic or the eastern United States as a whole. The largest difference is that our grapes are along the lakeshore. We have from Ohio to the eastern Lake Erie shore, we have almost 30,000 contiguous acres of Concord grapes. So we've been very concerned for a very long time that lanternfly could really take off in this region in ways that we can't even anticipate at this point, because we haven't seen the introduction of lanternfly to grape production of this scale. A lot of our work is mechanized, so there's been concern that maybe it is here in low numbers, but we just haven't seen it, because when you're covering that much acreage and you're not, you know, boots on the ground, hand harvesting, doing a lot of, you know, one-on-one work with the vines, when things are largely done via tractor, moving at very high speeds, comparatively, you know, 4 miles an hour being a pretty good speed around here. We were afraid for a while that maybe we were missing it, that maybe it was here, and we were kind of braced for that cataclysmic population increase that we've seen in other areas. Since the attention has been brought to the area and a lot of different agencies, between my team and Cornell Extension, Penn State Extension, as well as New York Ag and Markets, the Pennsylvania Department of Ag, and some of our commodity groups as well, have all been focusing their energy on protecting this region from lanternfly, we really haven't found any established populations that had escaped escaped monitoring up until this point, which is really good news. What's going on is, you know, kind of a point of speculation among us researchers. There could, aside from a supernatural explanation, which we don't really hold ourselves to in the sciences, We would like to think that some of our existing management practices for other common pests may be managing some of those early dispersal periods when those nymphs first leave the egg masses, when they hatch out in the spring and disperse into the landscape. It's possible because of the developmental timing, which we call phenology, of the grapevines and some of the other pests that we manage, including grapeberry moth. It is possible that the large-scale insecticide treatments may be knocking down those populations enough that the occasional late-season introduction, you know, a single adult that maybe lays a few egg masses in the fall, that maybe those few egg masses, when the nymphs disperse, that they are being kept under control by our existing systems. The reason that even would happen is that most of our growers are using the similar degree day models. So for anybody unfamiliar, a degree day model basically looks at the accumulation of heat or favorable environmental conditions to insect development, and can give farmers a more accurate date to apply their insecticide than just saying, you know, okay, mid-June, I have to spray for this pest every year. You're actually watching the science, watching the progression and the development, and applying the material at the best, most susceptible point in that pest's life cycle to reduce the need for repeat treatments. So it is possible, because the phenology of spotted lanternfly is so close to some of our other pests like Japanese beetle or grapeberry moth, that we are inadvertently controlling lanternfly through some of our existing practices. Occam's razor being what it is, that would make sense. But of course, when you're talking about so many different variables, it's really hard to say for sure or to test that that hypothesis either. But we would like to hope that maybe that's been what's happening, and it would make sense given that, like I said, we have almost 30,000 acres of grapes, but everyone's following the same degree day model and the same general recommendations. So it might be that this large scale concerted effort to manage a different pest may be providing us a buffer for a spotted lanternfly establishment in our region.
All right. That's interesting. Julie, let me ask you, this pest, as you say, share some characteristics with some other pests, especially in the vineyard, like the Japanese beetle. Do we know so much about a spotted lanternfly, or is something we're still getting to know and getting to kind of, you know, find its ways, adapt to it? Do we know so much? Because like you rightly said, it has spread to several states, you know, Indiana, Maryland, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Rhode Island, Virginia, West Virginia, and recently in Georgia. Do we know much about it? And are we anticipating much spread? Can you say something about that?
Yes. We know that it's easy to kill. A lot of insecticides are very effective against it. But what we don't know is it does some weird things. The part of its life cycle where it causes the biggest amount of damage is this late season period, when it seems to need to feed extremely heavily to become reproductively mature. And so what's weird about lanternfly is that, you know, it goes through a series of molts. So there's four nymphal instars, so four stages that don't have wings. And then we see adults emerge, which have the wings. And, you know, in eastern and central Pennsylvania, and in most of its where it's been the longest, that happens about the end of July. And what's weird about it is that even though it's an adult at the end of July, it doesn't start mating and laying egg masses until September. So when you only live one, you know, when you only go through one generation a year, and you're in an egg stage for 8 months, and you hatch out in May, you know, and you spend May through, you know, end of July as a nymph, to spend almost as much time as an adult and have to wait that long? That seems like, why would you be exposed to predators and diseases? And so it seems that they need to really, really feed heavily before they're ready to mate. And that's when they perhaps they've depleted the plants that they've been feeding on. But that's when they really move into new areas. We see them come into vineyards and feed very heavily. And so we don't exactly know why that's the case. But the thing that we're really concerned about here is that we expect that that timing of development, Megan did a great job explaining phenology and how temperature influences development. We expect that as lanternfly moves, you know, into these southern regions, it's going to develop sooner, right? We know that. And it might, when that feeding, that stage to say, I need to put on the feed bag and really feed heavily, that that's likely to occur earlier in places like North Carolina and Tennessee. And so some of the work that I've been doing, I've been, you know, collecting females monthly across each of these sites, you know, in New York, Pennsylvania, Nashville, Tennessee, and Kernersville, North Carolina, and weigh their live mass, and I dissect them and look at that development. And yeah, they're putting on the feed bag sooner. They're a lot heavier in the South. And so they overall get to accumulate a much greater body mass by the end of the season. And so basically what you're seeing as they move south is that they're feeding heavily over a bigger time window. And so they're not yet in vineyards in North Carolina or any of these southern places. And, you know, are they going to move in and do more damage because of that bigger feeding window? Also, even though they don't do damage to apple trees here in Pennsylvania or peach trees, you know, in Georgia, that might be a fine pest. They might deplete grapes and they might move into peach as just an alternative host because they still might be like basically productive. And so while it might not be enough to kill a peach tree, if peach is exposed to drought or some other stressors, that could be problematic. So we're waiting, you know, the impacts just might be different. That's what we don't know yet.
And if I could, I'd just like to follow up too that, you know, we think that some of that, the prevention of maybe the NIFL dispersion is what's keeping us safe. We're in this little bubble of no lanternfly for the time being. But because they are generalists and do have that ability to feed on a lot of different plants, eventually we do think that they will become established here. And it'll be the adults probably that we'll see first coming in to feed if we are doing something to manage this NIFL population. So just to kind of put that plug in for reporting in non-quarantine areas, if you are in one of those areas in Western New York or Northwest Pennsylvania, it is still very important to report it, whereas in the areas where it's been established, you know, that's fading a little bit. But it is really important because we don't have it yet. And there are a few other industries in this area that we're not really sure what the impact is going to be, especially the maple industry. So we do know that they feed on sugar maples. We don't know what level of deleterious effects they may have, but I know that's one of the other adjacent industries that hasn't seen very high levels of lanternfly yet, but could be negatively impacted, and we just don't know what that could look like.
Okay. All right. I think we have some quite good information here, but and before we even wrap it all up, what do we know about a tree of heaven? What is it, and how is it related to the spotted lanternfly?
That's another million-dollar question, Dennis. So Tree of Heaven, Ailanthus altissima, is a tree that has been introduced. It's an introduced invasive, and it shares much of the same native range as lanternfly. It's from Asia. And it tends to grow in really disturbed habitats, so along roadways and railroad lines and empty lots. And it is very challenging to kill. If you cut it down, it will just grow suckers, and it also spreads underground. So it itself is hard to manage. And it is a preferred host of spotted lanternfly. And so what we think is going on here is that we know that lanternfly doesn't require it to survive, but certainly you often find lanternfly on it. It likes to feed on it. And so we think that what happens is that lanternfly If it's a really good hitchhiker with humans, and if an egg mass or any life stage gets transported on a railroad line or a roadway, because Tree of Heaven grows along those same corridors, that when it pops off or when, you know, the eggs hatch out, there's often this plentiful favorite food source right there. And so we think that Tree of Heaven helps lanternfly become established in new areas. And so we're interested if we can potentially reduce Tree of Heaven, perhaps in an area where there isn't lanternfly or around a vineyard, that might be a way to delay or reduce the probability of lanternfly moving into that area. But that's an open question that we're working on researching.
Okay. Is there anything you want to add with regards to the Tree of Heaven?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, around in this area, what we've been doing, because we don't have spotted lanternfly yet, is, you know, if you have a large stand of it or a lot of it in areas adjacent to grapes, we are encouraging removal because we don't have lanternfly here yet. So we don't want to, you know, essentially wave a flag of of attracting it beyond our 30,000 acres of grapes. But what we're also doing is encouraging folks that have, you know, maybe a tree here or a tree there or a small stand to use those areas to monitor spotted lanternfly, to put up some sorts of sticky traps, something where you can keep an eye out and have an established point. So most folks can't go out and scout or visually observe all of, you know, 200 acres. But if you just have a couple of Tree of Heaven where you have some traps, it gives you a kind of a focused point where you can check to see if it's present in your area. So it's not foolproof, but it is something that you can do that could help you to be aware as early as possible if lanternfly is becoming established.
Okay. And you haven't identified any around your vineyard?
No, we've found in Erie County, Pennsylvania, and Chautauqua County, New York, thus far, all we've found is a few adult hitchhikers, we call them. Spotted lanternfly is really good at jumping and clinging onto vehicles, even when they're moving at high speeds. We've observed them hanging on at 65 miles an hour pretty well. So we have had a few that we believe came from, you know, one of the heavily infested areas, Pittsburgh or Cleveland. A lot of interstates run through this area. So there's been a few found not in vineyards. Thus far, we haven't found, you know, I want to knock on some wood, but we haven't found any in any of the vineyards in Erie County, PA, or Chautauqua County, New York. But there have been a few near businesses that see a lot of traffic from folks not from the area. So we're hoping that those few that jump off here and there haven't been able to lay egg masses and get an established population. We do have a lot of scouting going on. So far, so good.
All right. So wrapping it all up, let me ask you, Megan. You deal with farmers a lot. What are some of their concerns? Are they worried? Are they scared about the situation? How do you assure them? And what would you tell them? Should they be worried or should they keep calm with the whole situation?
I mean, cautious, I think. Cautiously optimistic, I would say, would probably be the best stance for a grower. There's no getting around the fact that spotted lanternfly, if and when it's introduced to this area, probably when at this point, is going to have an economic impact. There's really no getting around it. They do require more management and management outside of the normal window of when agricultural practices are taking place. So that the post-harvest insecticide treatment that Dr. Urban mentioned, you know, some of that pre-harvest management that has to occur to keep the lanternfly out of the harvested grapes. And I will mention they don't actually feed on the fruit. I don't know if we mentioned that, but the lanternfly doesn't feed on the fruit itself, but will sometimes get pulled into our mechanical harvesters along with the grape berries. So there are absolutely concerns and absolutely reasons to be cautious and concerned and to be aware of the pest as soon as it does get established in this area. But I do think that with the work that we've been doing with our collaborations with the researchers, I think we do have a pretty good strategy that we've been educating growers on at in-person meetings, webinars, and through other methodologies, podcasts, and similar. So we are doing a lot, and we are available regularly for growers to meet in person to talk about their concerns. So just kind of being there on a personal level to support what their concerns are. And we listen very closely to our industry as well as the processors in the area about their concerns. And we do our best to kind of be that liaison for the research coming down the pipeline and the grower concerns so that we're doing as much as we can, as quickly as we can to give folks an effective toolbox for when they are dealing with it.
All right. Thank you very much, Megan. Your very last words, Julie, what do you think farmers should do? What are you going to tell them? Is it something to panic about? Is it something that you are researching and will come up with answers soon to them? How should they react to this?
I would go with Megan's answer of cautiously optimistic. We're working on it. There's some really promising biological control agents, parasitoid wasps that lay their eggs in lanternfly nymphs, that USDA APHIS is working on, you know, some other better trapping, better monitoring methods. We have a lot of research in the pipeline. So I think, again, cautiously optimistic, but in the short term, being very vigilant and reporting lanternfly is really important because the longer we can keep it out of the vineyards here, that buys us more time to come up with better solutions.
All right. Thank you very much. So we talked about a spotted lanternfly. It's actually a beautiful pest. Yeah, but it has several disadvantages. And then I had Megan and Julie share with me what they know about it going forward and the solutions and what work is being done around this. This is not going to be the last of it. We'll be talking about it some more. So you can also get to learn about this pest and how to keep it away and also how to probably maintain it or whatever the researchers say. Thank you very much for being on AgriCouriers. My name is Dennis Bafo Iwa, and we're going to certainly meet on the next episode. Thank you both as well.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you very much.